President Donald Trump considering sweeping new sanctions against North Korea in the wake of its recent missile test and an escalating nuclear threat. The sanctions would aim at cutting Pyongyang off from the global financial system and could be modeled after the sanctions leveled against Iran that led to the 2015 deal reining in its nuclear program.
I think that if you look at what was the biggest proxy for the Trump trade, it was financials. They jumped the most initially after the election, and they've enjoyed a tremendous run on the back of a rising path for short-term interest rates and some expectation for some regulatory relief where the need has been so acute. So I think that anything that temporarily interrupts the Trump trade, that would have to come out first of the financials. But I see it more as a barometer of sentiment these days than anything structural.
American footprints on distant worlds are not too big of a dream. And with this bill, he is taking the latest step towards making that dream a reality by reiterating NASA's mission to ensure America remains a leader in space exploration. This bipartisan, bicameral legislation provides NASA with the full support it needs to fulfill this and many other important missions.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's March 22nd, 2017, 5:11 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day as we get going. Lots to talk about this morning. Where did we begin with the opening montage there? First with the NASA budget yesterday. You all know I'm a space geek, but the NASA budget is, there's a glaring omission from it. It is the Earth Sciences Program left in the lurch and sort of hanging in the wind. In addition to not mentioning that yesterday, that covers, by the way, Earth Science programs and all of those climate change programs that NASA is involved in. The NASA budget does include some favorable money to get us possibly to the moon or Mars, so that's good news. Also in the montage there, the latest on the Trump trade ending. There's some developing news on that front this morning with President Trump. The AP has just released a report saying it has confirmed that Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, secretly worked for a Russian billionaire to advance the interest of Vladimir Putin. That's a story just crossing the wires this morning as we begin the program. Let's go to the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, where we find Dow futures pointing toward what will likely be a negative open on Wall Street after a rough day yesterday. The Dow Jones futures are off 36 points. The S&P futures and NASDAQ futures are off about 4 points and 2 points, respectively. Crude oil is trading down almost 1.5% this morning. Over in Europe, all of the arrows are pointing down as well, with the FTSE leading the way off almost 1%. The other indices not far behind, with the DAX and CAC off as well. Asian markets are generally lower as well. Shares in Asia fell, with Tokyo tumbling more than 2% after stocks here in this country took their biggest loss in 5 months. The Nikkei 225 fell 2.1%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index dropped about 1.5%. Japan has also reported its biggest monthly trade surplus since 2010 in February, as exports to China surged by 28%. Preliminary customs data released this morning shows overall exports rose 11% and edged up about 1%. Again, that's Japan's report on trade. The steepest pullback in U.S. stocks since the presidential election reveals, as you heard in the opening montage there, investor angst about President Trump's ability to push through major reforms, leaving stocks vulnerable to long-anticipated correction. The S&P 500, in its second longest bull market ever, has risen close to 10% since November 8th, and yesterday suffered about 1% loss as the Dow, as well as the NASDAQ, did as well. Valuations at their highest in over a decade. Investors have been expecting a pullback, even if its catalysts haven't been so clear. But there is concern with the health care debate going on in Washington that perhaps Trump's policies are in a little bit of trouble. The health care policy definitely doesn't have the votes yet to pass the House, and we're expecting a vote on that tomorrow. Well, as we begin the opening bell this morning, saving water. It's a pretty big deal for big companies, companies like Ford, which has a big plant here in Chicago down on Torrance Avenue. Andy Hobbs is the Global Director of Environmental Quality at Ford. He's with us here this morning on the opening bell. Andy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve, and thank you.
Glad to have you with us this morning. So tell us why the water savings is a big deal at a company like Ford.
You know, well, first of all, there's no better place than on the shore of Lake Michigan to recognize the importance of water to companies and to communities and to shareholders. And to shareholders is an important option. Back in 2000, we recognized water was an unknown quantity for us. We didn't know how much we used. We didn't really know how much we spent. So we focused on it, particularly in areas that were water-stressed. And as we realized that we could save water, help our communities, it led us to lead to $10 billion worth of less water consumption, which is around about 61%. So if you consider that from a shareholder perspective, we'd have paid for 10 billion gallons worth of water that we didn't need to. So it's one of those unique business opportunities that's a huge environmental benefit and a huge benefit to the company and its shareholders.
We sometimes think of our own homes of saving water. It certainly does help the bottom line. That gives you and Ford money to spend elsewhere, doesn't it?
It does. You know, it's not just we are a business, obviously, that likes to reward our shareholders and our customers, and it really is direct to the bottom line when you're not spending cash on water, but you're spending it on the vehicle itself. But the communities hugely benefit from this. The less water we draw from the communities, the more water that is available for our communities, our employees, and just the world in general.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, the Dow Jones slid nearly 238 points yesterday to close at 20,668, the biggest one-day loss in September. The S&P 500 suffered its worst day of the year, closing down 29 points. The NASDAQ fell 107 points to finish at 5793. The markets have enjoyed a relatively steady rise since Donald Trump's election. Analysts say stocks are now being dragged down by concerns that the president's economic agenda is caught up in politics. For decades, it dominated the retail landscape. Now there's substantial doubt about the ability of Sears to stay in business. Those are the words of the parent company, which says it's trying to generate income by selling real estate and borrowing money to keep its 140,000 employees on the payroll. FedEx saw its income and revenue rise during the peak holiday season, but higher fuel costs held down profits and the company missed Wall Street's forecasts. December package volume was the heaviest ever, but unlike business deliveries, shipments to consumers are spread out and more costly to deliver. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program at 522. Chicago's Ford Assembly Plant, which is the home of the Ford Taurus and the Ford Explorer, implemented energy-saving efficiencies over the last year. According to the company, saved 47 million gallons of water. Andy Hobb is the Global Director of Environmental Quality at Ford. And Andy, we were talking before the break about why all of this is important. Maybe we should take a step back and tell our listeners exactly what you use water for in the manufacturing process there.
There's two really big consumers of water. One is the pretreatment process of the vehicle. You know, when the body comes, it's oily. It needs cleaning before we paint it. So we submerge the vehicle in 8 huge baths of pretreatments. That is a huge consumer of water that people generally don't pay attention to. So we really monitored that. We put wireless monitors on it. We locked off opportunities for change. We like processes that are stable. And our intention is to reuse about 90% of that water, which is huge. I mean, that saved us last year about 13 million gallons. It probably, as you said before, will save us upward of 47 million gallons alone next year. And if you think about that from a perspective that a million gallons sounds a lot, well, 47 million gallons is 71 Olympic-sized swimming pools, so a huge amount of water.
So the goal, and it's a really important goal, is eventually 0% of drinking water being spent there at the plant. Why is that important, especially when you perhaps get into places that are having water shortages?
Yeah, every gallon of water we take from a community is a gallon less available for that community. So if we can recycle all our water and only use drinking water for human consumption in our facilities, that's our goal. And we're going to do that worldwide. We think it's an achievable goal and a very important goal.
So how have you done this there at the plant? Is it do you have sort of your own water treatment and savings area? Is that how this is working?
We, you know, it's all about people. It's what you said before at home. It's about people not leaving your faucets running. It's about people paying attention to detail. It's about people that will implement these processes. And we have professional environmental engineers that help drive these teams. But it relies on everybody in the Chicago assembly plant to really help.
This is a big announcement today because this is the United Nations World Water Day, where we sort of draw our attention to areas of the country that aren't as fortunate as we are here by Lake Michigan to have plenty of water. Why is this as important globally, Andy?
Many of our facilities operate in water-stressed areas. In some places, we're in desert areas, which and the communities have very limited access to water. And if you really think about it globally, there's about 2% of the world's water that is drinkable. So as you say, we are very fortunate to be surrounded by the Great Lakes, but many communities around the world are not. So we believe it's the right thing to do for all our communities. And as I mentioned before, we think it's a huge benefit as the cost of infrastructure, the cost of water has gone up, you know, really exponentially and will continue to do so. It's a huge benefit to our company as well.
Well, Andy, congratulations to everyone there at Ford. Thank you for being a good corporate neighbor.
Thank you very much, Steve.
All right, Andy Hobbs is the Global Director of Environmental Quality at Ford, the big plant here in Chicago down on Torrance Avenue, saving about 47 million gallons of water, looking to have zero drinking water wasted at the plant there. By the way, this is, we mentioned World Water Day. It is March 22nd every year. The United Nations estimates 1.8 billion people use a source of drinking water that's contaminated with something, either with feces or some sort of chemical causing all kinds of diseases. And today, the sustainable goals of that is to get everybody clean drinking water as fast as possible.
From ABC News, Tech Trends, a new phone scam that could cost you big. Beware of just one ring. That's the warning from the FTC, which says scammers have begun dialing cell phones, letting it ring once, and then waiting for you to get curious and call them back. ABC News fixer Stephanie Zimmerman explains.
It showed up a couple of years ago, and now it's making a comeback. These are overseas scam artists that use auto dialers, and they're hoping that you'll be curious enough to call back. And if you do, you end up with a big international calling charge on your bill.
And sometimes when you call back, you're kept on hold, which sticks you with an even bigger charge on your bill. So what can you do?
If you're scammed, you should call your wireless carrier and ask them to remove the charge from your bill. And then you should file a complaint with the Federal Communications Commission and the Federal Trade Commission.
And these calls are often hard to spot since they often appear to be from U.S. area code. So beware and don't call back any unfamiliar numbers. With Tech Trends, I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program, 538. Glad to have you along for our Wednesday Opening Bell show and the Housewares Show. The International Housewares Association has just wrapped up its big show at McCormick Place. This is where everybody goes, everybody comes to find out what's going to be hot in the house, in the kitchen especially. And we're happy to have with us this morning on the Opening Bell one of the people who knows best what just happened and what the trends are going to be. John Jesse is the Vice President of Industry Development at the International Houseware Association. John's with us this morning here on the Opening Bell. Glad to have you, John.
Good morning. My pleasure to be with you.
Well, the International Home and Houseware Show is a destination event, really, for a lot of folks. It's certainly one of those places I like to come because I like to spend time in the kitchen. If you had to pick a couple of the biggest items from the show, what would they be?
Oh, we see a lot of innovation. That usually is what takes place at the show. We have 2,200 exhibitors that come from all over the world, from 45 countries. A total of 62,000 attendees, and they come to really see innovation in the home, specifically in the kitchen as it relates to housewares. This is the Super Bowl of the industry, and as you go through the show, you really see a lot of different trends in product and in color. Some of the most, the strongest, if you will, type of trends that we see right now are really in the smart home. We this year had tried to put together a pavilion that tries to highlight innovation. As you know, technology is changing rapidly, and we try to pull some of that together for our exhibitors so that they can see that technology on our floor because it's ever-changing. And that happens everywhere throughout the home, and specifically now moving into the kitchen.
Yeah, and I know it's probably tough for you to single out any particular product. I'll do one for you that I think is good. I just put this in just to see what the buzz was. And
sure.
One of the things that got hits, the most hits that I see, is this oven that you can actually, it actually has a camera in it, and you can watch your food being cooked from some remote location. That's pretty cool.
That's correct. It is. It takes from, you may have seen also refrigerators that begin to do that.
Yeah.
But yes, there was a particular item from Anova cookware that not only can you look at your cookware or at your food and meal being cooked, it cooks it precisely. There are sensors in, and you can use a mobile app, whether it's on a tablet or a phone, to determine not only watching it cook in your stove, but also changing temperatures. You can put different types of food in it that will cook at varying temperatures throughout the cycle. Never have to open it. And it not only monitors temperature, but also monitors humidity. So you can see where that whole smart technology is changing and getting into the kitchen.
Yeah, it seems, John, that the smart technology, we were just talking about it sort of erupting on the scene, it seems just like a few years ago. Has it reached the point of maturity now where this is now going to be the thing, or is it still got a little growing to do?
Oh, I would say it has a lot of growing to do. The technology, obviously, is rapidly changing, and you've seen it really come into existence in the consumer electronics area initially, but it's now just really getting into the mainstream, into the kitchen, into the home. I think some of the challenges that we see, that the industry sees, is how do we make it easier? How do we make it more convenient? If it doesn't seem to save you time or money or make your life easier, it may not be worth purchasing. So I think we're at its infancy. It's got to be accepted by the consumer. They have to feel comfortable about it. So I think there's a lot of talk about it. I think there's a lot of press, which is really good. But ultimately, you have to have the retailer understand it, be able to educate the consumer, and then the consumer ultimately really seeing that value in it, and how does it make their life easier.
You know, one of the great things about the International Home and Houseware Show is it's not just a bunch of things on display. You actually have panel discussions, and there are really expert discussions about how things are going in this industry. And I know one of the things that you guys talked about was the notion that these technological advances are disrupting the housewares industry. When we say disrupting, what do we mean by that?
Well, I think it's when we talk about disrupting, it's really becoming the point at which you need to think about it. How does it really change your life? And I think it's more of a thought process in terms of what disrupting means. For years, a lot of the same type of product was in the house. But all of a sudden, when you see technology change things, you need to sit back and take a look at it. And go, oh my God, this may totally change the way we live. And it's disrupting in a positive way. A lot of trends you see will come and go. They may be just trends in the industry. This is really a lifestyle change, and it's here for the long haul. So as you see that evolve and you see really we're at our infancy and where it's going, it positively disrupts the way we live. And it not only makes you look at, here's an item at the moment that may change my life. It's how it will really evolve to change everything around what we do, not just one individual piece of product or an item, but really change the way we live and how our whole lifestyle changes. And in this case, it's really around the kitchen.
And is it something that is it a product that has to be developed to last? Because I'm thinking, you know, in my kitchen, it's not every day that you go out and buy a big appliance. And so you kind of hope that the thing that you do buy and spend a lot of money on is going to last over years. Is that a big challenge?
Yeah, absolutely. There's got to be a value to it in the consumer's eyes, no question, in terms of will this technology be obsolete in the near future, or where will it add value to me and my life? Will it make it easier? And am I willing to invest that for a long period of time, or will something be obsolete? So, yes, absolutely. It will be a challenge going forward to all the manufacturers who are in this space to ensure that they offer that to the consumer and know that they're going to be willing to make that investment, or potentially it could evolve too. Something else that's unique about this is, since a lot of this is electronic-based and technology-based, there can be upgrades to it without having to go and invest in a whole new unit. A lot of the things that are being developed are app-based, which leads to the fact that the apps can be updated to add new benefits and features over time.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool to have something in your kitchen that you just do a sort of like an update like you would on your iPhone for.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And all that is taking place as it's embedded into the product itself, as well as, like I said, into the apps also.
How big of a deal is security, John? Because yesterday we talked to the Better Business Bureau about this, and consumers are very concerned about the security of the Internet of Things items, not just in the kitchen but around their house. Is that a big deal too?
Yes, it absolutely is, and not only in our industry, but I think in the electronics industry in total. There's no question that a lot of the thought leaders within our industry are thinking about that. The manufacturers are thinking about it, and we even had some educational series and speakers at the show who spoke to security, because it is absolutely something that people need to take to heart, and the consumer needs to feel comfortable with it as part of their investment in anything electronic.
The other thing, too, that I see is one of the big talking points and moments of discussion is this idea of fragmentation. Do you have all of these things that you buy? Let's say your kitchen is fully smart. Is everything going to talk to everything? Will you be able to use these things in concert, or are they just going to be separate big pieces of stuff in your kitchen?
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of this has to play out yet, and there are a lot of the big players within the industry who we look to partner with over time as well to try to help educate not only exhibitors but, you know, retail and certainly the consumer. But yes, that's all part of the convenience factor of what the consumer wants. And they may initially be a little hesitant to make certain investments if they don't know that they're going to have that convenience long term to be able to have everything connected. They don't want to live in silos. They don't want all of their products to be in silos and run individually. They do want them all connected. So a lot of our manufacturers are working with some of the electronic manufacturers, whether it be Google Home or Amazon Alexa, to make sure that a lot of these platforms that they're using are trying to be able to be interconnected and make things much easier. So you're absolutely right.
You mentioned Amazon Alexa there and the Echo and some of these other things. We've seen the Roomba, the little robot that cleans your floors. Mm-hmm. But what about robots? Are consumers ever going to be happy having a robot? I think back to the Jetsons and the futuristics. Is that coming at some point or no?
Oh, it's amazing how often we talk about that, even within the industry, literally using your reference of the Jetsons. But a lot of that is being driven by certainly voice recognition, which is very much a hot topic right now, as we both just mentioned, whether it's Amazon Alexa, Google Home, certainly Siri. A lot of this interconnectivity is really going down the path of voice recognition, but certainly sensors. And if you think about this, the whole idea of sensor, especially starting at least in the consumer's mind, they saw it in the robotics of some of the floor care items that have been out. And those things have been out 10 plus years, and they continue to evolve as well. However, you know, certainly that whole thought process is going to be continue to evolve. We haven't seen it's not on the downside of the life cycle. If anything, you're going to see more evolution and some of those sensor-related things being integrated into other products.
You know, when I see some of the products that you can actually have them order replacement, either detergent for the laundry or something, I always think back to the Star Trek episodes of where they just went to the oven or whatever the thing was and said, you know, computer, make me dinner. Is that going to happen in our lifetimes? Because it seems like certainly possible.
I would not be surprised, and I would think anything is possible with technology. I think we're always amazed at what happens and how quickly it happens. You may even have a show like ours that brings together some of the most innovative things from our member companies. And by the time it hits retail, maybe this fall, some of those things may certainly have been evolved even more from then. But technology is allowing us to certainly change things rapidly, and that will continue.
John, how long until we see, let's say we see something really cool that was on the floor of the show this year, and it's just sort of in a prototype mode, how soon do we see something like that possibly come to market? And is there one country over another that is doing all this better than the other?
I don't believe there's one country or area that's doing it better than others. We're seeing certainly from a sourcing perspective. This is such a global marketplace now, and communication and technology is moving so rapidly that this is very much an international type of area and type of product line. And certainly everybody's involved quickly. But in terms of time to market, it really varies. A lot of our manufacturers and exhibiting members come to market and they're ready to ship immediately. Some come to market to determine how quickly there is interest in that product. But for the most part, all the newness and the new innovation and new products, whether it's smart home or other products at the show, usually will be available in the market this year and will be seen at retail at some time during 2017.
John, thanks for getting up with us and being on the opening bell this morning, and best of luck to you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All right, John Jesse is the Vice President of Industry Development at the International Houseware Association, the International Home and Houseware Show 2017, just wrapping up at McCormick Place.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures looking solidly like we'll have a negative open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures off 37 points now. NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower as well. Gold and silver are trading lower this morning. In Europe, all of the indices are lower. And same story in Asia. The Nikkei going to end off more than 2% off 414 points in Europe this morning. The FTSE leading the way lower off almost a full percentage point this morning. All of the other markets there not far behind. A couple of other stories we're watching for you here on the opening bell. Sears Holdings Corporation has acknowledged substantial doubt about its ability to keep operating, raising fresh concerns about a company that's lost more than $10 billion in recent years. The retailer added so-called going language to its annual report filing, which was obtained earlier this week, just yesterday, as a matter of fact, suggesting that weak earnings have cast a pall on its future as a business. The filing saying our historical operating results indicate substantial doubt exists to take the company's ability to continue as a going concern. And that from Hoffman Estates yesterday, sounding like the end is near for Sears Holdings Corporation. By the way, Sears stock after that news yesterday finished lower by almost a percent. It's lower there this morning as the trading day begins. Let's check the Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Wednesday, March 22nd. The National Association of Realtors releases existing home sales for February. No other big government reports out today. It is World Water Day. Advocates say there are more than 663 million people living without a safe water supply close to home, coping with health impacts, too, of using contaminated water. This is a day that's sponsored by the United Nations to draw attention to those problems. The 44th Daytime Emmy Awards nominations will be announced during the afternoon today. The April 30th ceremony is when that is held. Select number of nominations are announced today. Full announcement will come via a press release. Just some of the things out there today on this Wednesday, March the 22nd.